There's a lot on my heart, so, and it's not completely polished, so thank you for allowing me your ears for this time. And I want to take you on a little journey, so if you're willing, please close your eyes or lower your gaze, as is comfortable. I want you to picture yourself on the top of a mountain. And from this mountaintop, you can see in all directions. You can see through both space and through time. You can see where your people have been and where they are going. And as you look down from this mountaintop, you see a river. And you see your people on the edge of the river, looking over at what could be. And you can see that future, you can see that world. And even as you hold that world in your vision, you honor your mortality and you recognize that you may never enter with them. You can open your eyes. I grew up in a place that did not have any mountains. I grew up in the flat Great Plains of Minnesota, Anishinaabe land. And the only place that you could really go to get perspective and to see a horizon was the bridges and the banks of the Mississippi River. And that river is on my heart tonight. As you may know, an Enbridge tar sands pipeline is being constructed from Canada to Wisconsin, and it passes through northern Minnesota through treaty protected lands, and it even crosses the Mississippi River twice and many other rivers as well. And this replacement pipeline is one of many that has, you know, pipelines are proven to leak. This is what we know, and this causes toxic oils to spill into the soil and the water. And as the indigenous people of Minnesota have said and advocated, this is not the time to continue to invest in fossil fuels. And I don't think I have to tell any of you who have likely already lived through some fire seasons here that this is not the time to invest in more fossil fuels. So the Native people, the Anishinaabe people, have brought this to court, and the corporations have held up in court against the treaty rights. And I've watched from afar as a movement of water protectors led by Indigenous women has gathered along the route of the pipeline in Minnesota to halt its construction and to protect this sacred land. So I long awaited the time that I could be there in body and bring my body to the front lines. And that time came last week. So I was finishing up a 3-week visit in the Midwest to see family. And the time had come, I had space, and a clear ask for support arrived in my inbox. There was a Women for the Rivers Stop Line 3 rally happening at the Shell City camp. And I booked myself a ticket on the shuttle, and I packed up all my things, and I woke up early in the morning, and I'm in the car on the way to the shuttle, and I look at the weather and I realize that there is an air quality alert for northern Minnesota through the following day, and that the AQI was above 100 and would continue to be that way for the rest of the afternoon. This was an outdoor event. I wasn't driving. There was no indoor space. And I had a sensitive body before the last 4 years of wildfires. And I sat in the car in really deep distress, not knowing what to do. Is this a moment to sacrifice? Is this a moment to risk? Is this a moment to care for myself, to step back? This is a boundary I don't cross in California. And ultimately, I made the call not to go that day. I was devastated. And I spoke to an organizer on the phone to give up my shuttle seat, and she reflected to me, climate disaster is preventing us from taking action to prevent more climate disaster. I'll say it again. Climate disaster is preventing us from taking action to prevent more climate disaster. And she reminded me that we have to take care of ourselves because we are in this for the long haul. This week's Torah portion speaks to journeys of transformation that are bigger than one person or even one generation. The parasha opens with a plea of yearning. Va'et Hanan, Moses pleaded with God, please let me live long enough to pass into the promised land with the rest of the Israelites. Please. And God would not hear of it, said, never bring this up again, and instead instructs Moses to go to the top of a mountain and to look in all directions, look upon where they've been, and see that land that the Israelites will enter so he can guide them with that vision, but he will never enter it. He's only gifted the vision to pass to his people. This might sound familiar. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., may his memory be a blessing, found sustenance in this story as he fought for Black liberation. The night before his assassination, in his final speech, he acknowledged the deep sickness of the world, and he told his people, God has allowed me to go up to the mountain. I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we will get to the promised land. Dr. King knew the road ahead was long and that he may not live to ever see the results of his efforts. And yet he was able to transcend that small idea of self and trust in a process that takes time. Even with all the progress made since Dr. King spoke those words, we find ourselves in troubled times. Around the world, people are still dying of COVID-19. Black folks are still losing their lives to state violence. Indigenous treaty rights are dismissed in the courts in favor of big corporations. We are in a battle to protect voting rights, biodiversity, and the basic necessities of life. Clean air, clean water, healthy soil. Last Sunday on Tisha B'Av, the holiday of mourning the destruction of the temple, I tried again to go north and to defend the holy temple of the Mississippi headwaters. My dad and I awoke at dawn and drove nearly 3 hours to the Water Protector Welcome Center, where the website invited folks to come and join in prayer and help out around camp for any amount of time. We arrived to find the camp nearly emptied following a long, intense week of defense. There was little I could do to help, but I was welcome to stay and be with those who remained, who were resting and recovering. Most had gone to the Shell City camp 2 hours away, where an urgent call had gone out as drilling began on Erev Shabbos. This was one of my most intensive lessons on ego and organizing. I did not have the capacity to go to that other camp. And yet, this is not what I came to do. I came to be helpful, not to rest. I had friends flying in from the coast who had no personal connection to Minnesota. How could I leave my homeland without making a meaningful contribution to this movement? These were the thoughts going through my head as I watered the garden, the one task that I was given to help out. And then something began to happen. I began to soften. Standing there with the hose in the intense drought that Minnesota is in right now, I began to slow down. I listened to the water falling from the hose to the soil. I marveled at a leopard frog who leapt out of the wet leaves. And I started to wonder if this was actually exactly where I was supposed to be at the end of a 3-week journey that had brought me to the depths of my personal trauma and the heights of familial love and belonging. And so I walked barefoot in the forest. I listened to the birds. I swam in the Mississippi River for the first time, and I let my body take in how good it is, this thing that we are fighting to save. It was Tisha B'Av. It was a day of mourning, and the camp was in mourning. The construction was already complete at this site. I saw the pipeline going through the river. And in the words of the folks there, this was their land to protect, and they had failed to protect it, and so it was a sad time. And yet our sages teach us that it is this very moment, this very place of destruction and devastation, that we birth the Moshiach consciousness, ushering in an age of peace and harmony. How do we do it? We love. We love what we still have as well as what we've lost. We love the beauty in the world and our community's resilience. We love our vision for the future, even if we will not reach it in our lifetime. After Moses tells the people that he can't cross with them into the land, he gives them three things: the Ten Commandments, the Shema, and the V'ahavta. You shall love. I want to leave you with an excerpt from V'ahavta by Aurora Levins Morales. Thus spoke the prophet Roque Dalton. Altogether, they have more death than we, but altogether, we have more life than they. There is more bloody death in their hands than we could ever wield, unless we lay down our souls to become them, and then we will lose everything. So instead, imagine winning. This is your sacred task. This is your power. Imagine every detail of winning, the exact smell of the summer streets in which no one has been shot, the muscles you have never unclenched from worry, gone soft as newborn skin, the sparkling taste of food when we know that no one on earth is hungry, that the beggars are fed, that the old man under the bridge and the woman wrapping herself in thin sheets in the back seat of a car, and the children who suck on stones, nest under a flock of roofs that keep multiplying their shelter. Lean with all your being towards that day when the poor of the world shake down a rain of good fortune out of the heavy clouds and justice rolls down like waters. This Shabbat, may we nourish ourselves in our love for what is. May that love sustain us and inspire us to play the roles that we can right now for the movement at this moment in our lives and journeys. And when the new week arrives, may we give it all we've got, knowing that it's bigger than any of us, and that we will make it to the promised land. Shabbat shalom.